and welcome to this month's edition of Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. We have two very exciting novels today, both rooted in politics. First, Born on a Tuesday by L. Nathan John, a Nigerian writer who's in the UK for his European book launch and the inauguration of the UK headquarters of publisher Cassava Republic. We asked him what his book is all about.
Born on a Tuesday is a story of boyhood, a coming-of-age story that follows the life of the main character, Dantala, who is very quickly thrust into a world where there is both faith and violence. And it follows his personal development and how he reacts to the various influences in his life, how he reacts to changing faith, how he reacts to loss. And all of this against the backdrop of the political events in northern Nigeria.
Dantala is a young Hausa man, and he's learning English, and his personal dictionary is sprinkled throughout the book.
Dantala starts to learn English when he meets a young man who also comes to join the mosque, in, of course, in exchange for Arabic lessons. His little dictionary is his way of keeping track of the world and understanding the world through this new language. He has new access to a new culture, to a new way of seeing things. And in many ways, the translation is a crossover from one world to another and how things in one language, for example, or in one set of cultures can be different from another, which he sees when he does sometimes a literal transliteration and sees how words change when you translate them to English and back.
Dantala also sees the rise of Boko Haram, or a Boko Haram-like group. He's even linked to it through his best friend.
A group like it. Just to say, I was very careful not to mention Boko Haram in the book at all. So there is not a single mention of Boko Haram in the book. My aim generally will show that Boko Haram is not an isolated incident. I was trying to show how easy it is within movements to have people slide into more fundamentalist interpretations of religion and how actually within Islam there is debate and conversation. When a rogue element arises, it is not often because of an absence of conversation or an absence of condemnation. It is often in spite of conversation and condemnation.
But unfortunately, also an oversimplification of the people, you know, of northern Nigeria.
Exactly, it is. So it's almost like fast food. You know, there's a bombing, then they give those summaries, which brings me back to what I wanted to do with the novel. I wanted to show that life actually in northern Nigeria is as complex as life anywhere else in the world, and that people have to make the same daily decisions that other people have to make about food, about partners, about friends, about business, about politics, and all of that, so that people are able to see human beings with aspirations and dreams and wants.
Thanks so much for this. Could you read us an excerpt from Born on a Tuesday?
The sugarcane here is sold in long, fat pieces. The way the skin is scraped, you would think they had competitions for who could scrape the cleanest. Few things are like sugarcane. When I want to chew it, I do not like having one or two small sticks because that will just make me want more. And if I cannot have it, I will be irritated that the longing for it has been created in me. But these long, fat ones, they make you remember Allah's goodness. I wonder sometimes if Al-Jannah will have food. In Bayan Lai, I asked Malam Jinedu about this, and he said that, inshallah, Al-Jannah will have sweeter things. I still wonder what things can be sweeter than this sugar cane. Perhaps it is just Santi talking. Santi is an enjoyment of food that makes you close your eyes and say and do foolish things. But I do think that maybe we should know if Al-Jannah will have sugar cane. I'm belching and chewing and swallowing. I reach the very last bit and it falls from my hand. As I struggle to save it from reaching the dusty floor, I step on it. I want to scream. There is something about the last piece of anything. It is like the enjoyment is summarized in that last piece. It is the final thing that makes the experience complete. Except if you deliberately throw it or give it away. Losing that last piece is like going on a long journey to deliver a message, then finding upon arriving that you left it at home. I pick up and examine the piece of sugarcane I have stepped on. It cannot be saved. Reluctantly, I throw it back to the ground. All the senti is gone with that last piece.
Next up, Mukoma Wangugi's book, Mrs. Shaw. The Kenyan writer and professor talks to us about one of the many themes of the book, one where history and memory do not always intersect.
Part of it is how we grew up. My father is a writer, but at some point he was in political exile. At some point he had been detained by the Kenyan government. But growing up in an authoritarian government, a dictatorship, we always had competing versions of history. We had the clean government version, and then we had the history we knew. And in Kenya specifically, we didn't grow up being taught about the fight for independence. We didn't grow up learning about the Kenya Land and Freedom Army, popularly known as Mau Mau. But we knew the history. Personally, in my own family, my uncle was in the Mau Mau. So at any rate, it's as if we had these two competing histories, and I wanted to play around with that. And when I was growing up, we still had all these legacies of colonialism around us. You know, so I wanted to bring that in.
It seems that you bring it in perhaps with the title and also with the character Mrs. Shaw, who is in the book, but she's not a big physical part of the book. She doesn't have a lot to say, but at the same time, she is a major symbol, which I thought was quite interesting that you would name the book that.
The titles kept changing, but she's the catalyst of everything, right? You know, because of the role she plays in actually catalyzing the war of independence. So really, without her, the Quarter Republic would have had a very, very different history. So it's as if she's the anchor of everything that happens. And she's one who allows the main character, Kalumba, even though he's a quarter nationalist, and she's a colonial remnant also in exile in the U.S., she's the one who allows him to get a sense of his history, a sense of himself, and an understanding of the history that propels him into exile, right? You know, so he's in exile because of fighting for the second independence and the betrayal that comes with that. But he's able to see the linkages of him being in exile and all the historical forces that pushed him there. But Mrs. Shaw, in the novel, historically, she doesn't exist historically. But there was this policeman who was a former colonial officer. His name was Mr. Shaw. He's real. I mean, he was this really big British guy who was part of the security force after independence. By all means, he was a killer. He still had the same colonial instincts. He was a racist and so on and so forth. But in my mind, I was thinking, okay, what if Mrs. Shaw, my fictional character, had been the wife to the real Mr. Shaw? So...
One of the other issues, and also a big issue in modern African literature, is the issue of the exile. Without giving anything away, specifically pertaining to this book, can an exile go home?
I think it's a lot of work because, first, you know, people grow roots where they are, even in my own personal experience. You know, people in exile, they get jobs there, they get families there, their kids are going to school there, the doctors. Essentially, you grow roots where you are. But I think it's much easier nowadays as opposed to, let's say, if you're exiled in the 1980s, where your main communication with people back home would have been either a telephone call or letters that would take weeks. But nowadays, I think it's so much easier to get connected that you can have, not necessarily seamless, but you're already in touch with so many things. For example, in my own case, I was just in Kenya in December for a literary festival, and most of the writers at the literary festival we have met either in Kenya or elsewhere. So in other words, there's a sense I'm still in touch with the community. But on the other hand, though, it's still very difficult because at the same time, life moves on.
The principal female character, she has a different view, I think, from any of the principal male characters of how the second revolution is to take place and also how certain events transpired that are actually leading to the downfall of the second revolution, which I thought was interesting.
I don't condone some of Winnie Mandela's actions during the struggle against apartheid. But if you follow her politics and you follow what she was saying about the Mandela rainbow of hope, if you will, she really was mounting a critique and saying, no, we need to deal with the inequalities. You cannot just have truth and reconciliation that doesn't address real material injustices. I don't want to say I was thinking specifically of Winnie Mandela, but certainly you have a lot of women who have been involved in struggles who have those views. You have people like Ruth First, who was part of the ANC militant group, who are able to say, no, we have to contend with history.
Now, here's an excerpt from the book, Mrs. Shaw.
The path for people like me is never far behind, and sometimes it is an anchor in a sea of sorrow. And being away from home only makes it worse. Like a ghost, the past is always present, and yet without physical form. How can one fight it? Perhaps, had I been able to stay home over time, you'd have forgiven me for those things that I couldn't have helped and those I could have. Perhaps I could have gone back to the stream where I witnessed your father's death, and over time, I would have become used to it, the massacres. Perhaps they could have laid some flowers there, as I have seen people do in sites where an accident has taken place and they have lost a loved one. Perhaps I could have passed by the building where I was tortured and remembered some of the things that happened to me in there. I saw in the papers here that if we win, our new government will open up the torture cells for tourists and national healings as they did in Azania.
That's all the time we have today for Africa Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Benietto. Check out our webpage at rfienglish.com for longer versions of these two interviews. Thanks for listening.